This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com.
All right, welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you on a glorious Tuesday. It is going to change rapidly, though. It's beautiful outside right now. Warm. Got some storms coming later. Be careful out there. We're in that pattern right now, you know. Really good one day. Not very good the next day. We've got to figure out when we're going to be playing golf. That includes here with my buddy John Scott, who joins me right now on the Western Hotline, WGRZ TV2. Sports director. I'm sure some golf in the plans this summer, although when you have a baby at home, John, like you do for the first time in a summer, it might be a little bit more tricky.
Yeah, I will give a major shout out to my wife, Heather. For a week ago, the day before the draft, it was super nice outside and I hadn't got out yet. And as you said, when I have a day off, it is my responsibility and duty to give her a much-deserved reprieve of taking care of Logan, but she was great, and I think she knew, because certainly she's lived it for a long time. The unwind before the wind of a 3 days of a NFL draft weekend, so that was my one time getting out last week, and now the uncertainty of how much beyond that is real.
John, I want to ask you about yesterday in the discussion, but really, and just in the context of the actual discussion about wide receiver, we all know what happened yesterday. You're in the media. We all saw it. And, you know, we're not hiding from that in any respect. But I think that there is a discussion here to be had about wide receiver. What are your overall thoughts on where the Bills are with the position and going into 2025?
I think it definitely could be better. I also think that the idea that because of how good the offense overall, or at least the points per game was a year ago, is a factor. It should be something to lean into for this upcoming season and the current state of things, I think, is a flawed argument, in my opinion. And I know that's what Brandon Bean is making, but you're banking on a lot. I mean, you're banking on Keon Coleman to be the Keon Coleman we saw in, what, a 3-4 game stretch prior to the injury. You're banking on Dalton Kincaid to be a player, at the very least, he was as a rookie. But if you drafted him where you drafted him, the way you propped him up as this mismatch kind of big slot, he needs to be better, especially when you look at the state of a lot of the production of young tight ends. They're banking on that, and we haven't seen it yet. They're banking on Curtis Samuel to not only be healthy, but be maybe the best version of himself that you saw out of Carolina, which was the selling point in bringing him and giving him a decent contract for the player that he's been a year ago. So that's three guys right there that you're banking on doing things that either they have only done once or limited and certainly haven't done in over a year. Oh, by the way, I like Joshua Palmer. I think he's a solid player, but he's never been anything more than a number three option, really. Maybe a two through some injuries in L.A. But You're asking guys to all collectively elevate to bring this unit to where I think it should be. And I also just at the core, Josh Allen is unbelievable. And you know his unbelievable play is going to simply elevate the people around him. That's what amazing all-time players do. That's what we saw a year ago. But that shouldn't also bring pause to say, if we're going to divide and conquer and distribute resources to build a roster, because we have Josh Allen, he'll make up for maybe what we're lacking in overall top-end ceilings with these guys, and so we can focus on other areas. I get it from a roster-building standpoint, but you've even seen the Kansas City Chiefs fresh off two straight Super Bowls with a similar philosophy at the wide receiver position a year ago, say, we maybe have won, but it's not sustainable. And that's where you saw them actually start to invest in the wide receiver position. And they didn't win the Super Bowl, but that doesn't mean their shift in mindset and kind of seeing through the trees. I think that was the right way to look at it. And I think the Bills at some point here are probably going to have to do the same.
John Scott on the Wester Hotline. Let's talk about what they did do in the draft. Max Harrison, their first pick. They go corner and then two defensive linemen the first two nights. I've been saying for about a month here, I figured it would be all defense. I don't think anyone was surprised at that. But then they go six out of their first seven. Your reaction to that much capital spent on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, that's where I absolutely agree with you. I agree with Brandon Bean. This draft was stacked with defensive heavy, which for a team that definitely needed and could use significant additions on the defensive side of the ball, it kind of worked out for them. That's the way the board kind of fell. Now, the board did not fall in the sense of, hey, you moved up 15 picks to take T.J. Sanders, and the board wasn't necessarily falling in the sense of you made a move up to go get Deion Walker. But I have no problem with that. And that's also just one quick note back on the wide receiver. I don't even have an issue with them not taking a wide receiver in the draft earlier because there were no wide receivers to me that, as the board was falling, stood out and said, well, this guy's going to be a difference maker. There are defensive guys, though. And this is a good infusion of new, young, cheap talent that hopefully can provide a difference for a group that clearly, even by what Brandon Bean said on your air yesterday in that whole exchange, he all but straightforward said the defense is the reason we lost the AFC championship game, and that's why defense between the draft and even free agency has been the top priority.
Let's talk about Jordan Hancock a little bit. You watched him play at Ohio State quite a bit. You're an Ohio State Buckeye fan. What did you see from Jordan Hancock? How do you think he translates to the NFL and specifically the Bills roster?
Well, it's funny. When you texted me and said, we're going to talk Jordan Hancock, even though I watch almost every Ohio State game and I know the roster well, when the roster is as stacked with All-Americans and top-end first-round type talent, a guy like Jordan Hancock kind of gets lost in the sauce. Mm-hmm. He's just a solid football player. If you've seen his RAS score, which is the kind of calculation that people use these days for athletic score to rate someone's athleticism, he's one of the most athletic guys, not even in this draft, but at his position in years and years and years. So he's got a good size. He's got good athleticism. And I think I heard you even mention it. Maybe he think of him as like a Saran Neal. I'm not sure this is a guy. I don't want to pigeonhole him and put up a wall before he's even got to one Bills drive. I mean, I don't know if he's ever going to be a key contributor on the defensive side of things, but I could definitely see him, his versatility, his athleticism as a core special teamer, a guy that you can slide in maybe as a chess piece here and there if he continues to develop. And as a fifth-round selection, why the heck not? I mean, once you're getting to that point, you're looking for traits, you're looking for versatility, and that is when, especially with, you know, I think as much as it's funny, we kind of, some people got tired of the, why do the Bills roster so many special teams core-type guys? I think that was also part of maybe some of the reasons that there were some issues, because you didn't have Saran Neal, you didn't have Tyler Medicavich, and I think maybe shifting back a little bit to getting some of those guys or developing those types of guys will help that third level of things as well.
The way I look at it is I think maybe Cam Lewis now just can kind of focus on one of these roles, and whichever one that is, Jordan Hancock becomes the other role. What I mean is backup nickel, backup safety, right? We know that Cam Lewis has kind of been both here a little bit over the last several years, and it's kind of left him a little bit thin at the position. Well, maybe Cam just is your strict backup nickel, and Jordan Hancock's your strict backup third safety, or vice versa.
100%, and I believe I've heard Cam tell me he thinks nickel is really his best spot. That's mm-hmm. where he's best suited.
Yep.
And but as a guy who's fighting for his life year in and year out just to stay in the league, and it's such an awesome story, especially as a UB kid. He's done that, and he has been an invaluable piece to the depth of the Bills' defense. But maybe for the betterment of them and certainly the betterment of him as the player, it's, hey, let's allow him to focus and let us know that this is our backup nickel, and let Jordan, while as a young player is going to have to assert himself and learn multiple positions, if we kind of say figure out this, whether it be safety or whatever, I think that will help in his development as well.
Let's go to day number three. Jackson Hawes, a blocking tight end, who I think could play a really significant role because we all know the Bills love to run the extra offensive lineman. The way I look at it, John, do you agree that maybe he replaces Alec Anderson and Alec Anderson just becomes more of a true backup offensive lineman, but now the Bills can still do what they do but have a guy with an eligible number to catch some passes?
100%. That's what I was going to say, is as effective as Alec Anderson and others who have taken that role from the offensive line as the eligible tackle, we've always, you're not in the press box during games, but I'm sure you're thinking it, like the joke is, oh, maybe one of those guys will catch a pass at some point. And it was the joke because it's a tackle. Yeah, they could do it, but there's truly no threat. And now if you actually put a tight end out there, you have the threat that you have to respect it. And it gives Joe Brady just one other layer that he can fold into the offense and play things off of and make it so defenses have to think about one other thing. Because, of course, Hawes is going to say this when he's picked, that he is more than just a blocking tight end.
Mm-hmm.
But even if he's like Lee Smith, just more than a blocking tight end, you still have to respect it to some extent.
Anything else from the draft for the Bills? I guess what's your kind of favorite pick for them, and what did you kind of question? It might be your least favorite pick or scenario.
I love the Max Harrison because, and I think it was, I forget, it was on your show. I was driving in either last Monday or Tuesday before the draft, and someone was discussing and using the analogy of golf about, oh, Brandon Bean's great at finding guys that just hit it in the fairway. They hit it in the fairway.
Yep.
And it stuck with me because I think Max Harrison is a guy that can drive the green. He also may go wayward left or right, and you may ride the coaster a little bit, but I'm glad that Bean went away from maybe the safer archetype that he and Sean McDermott prefer, especially at the cornerback position, and get someone that can maybe elevate into that star, superstar caliber, the difference maker, the playmaker, the game swinger, because Christian Benford is a very, very good cornerback. That's not who he is. Tre'Davious White had like 1 year and that was like that, and that's when he was a first team all pro. I understand cornerback, you got to have the ball thrown to you, and it's more as much luck as it is skill, but I like him being so dynamic, and I like, again, shifting away from maybe the safety net of these are the traits that we value. These are what the guys have to do. You have to be able to tackle. Well, what if this guy can just get the football and take it back the other way, or can run stride for stride, if not gain ground if he's beat a little bit, on guys like Jalen Waddle or Xavier Worthy or the speedsters that keep coming up through the wide receiver ranks? That's why that was my favorite pick. That does not mean that I think it's going to absolutely work, but I respect and like the idea of taking the swing. I guess on the other side, TJ Sanders, 15 spots up, I know people really liked him, but I just feel like in a really deep defensive line class, I maybe would have preferred to let things play out a little bit more. Not, they got back into the third and it's fine, but there was a little bit of you're sitting there at 62 going like, oh, they could have gotten this guy. And who knows, maybe that's when the wide receiver conversation shifts at that point. But, Sanders, I think it's interesting. And obviously they addressed the one tech with Walker in the fourth. But when I look at the draft, I'm always looking at paths for guys to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that if that guy ultimately is envisioned by them to play next to Ed Oliver, does that change what maybe has been a missing link on the defensive front?
John Scott of the Western Hotline, WGRZ TV Channel 2. All right, John, I know you've got some opinions on the Browns draft. John has been following the Browns most of his life. He's an Ohio guy. What did you think about everything that was going on, from Shedeur Sanders to Dylan Gabriel to trading the pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars, all of it?
The funny thing is honestly, the thing I have the least issue with, and I think was the smartest pick, was Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round. I think that was the best thing that they did. I didn't agree with trading away the possibility of selecting a generational unicorn talent like Travis Hunter. I didn't agree with it. I didn't agree with then getting a defensive tackle fifth overall who is not known for rushing the passer. I didn't agree with a linebacker with the first pick of the second round. I didn't agree with taking Quinshon Judkins over Travion Henderson in the second round. I certainly think the Dillon Gabriel pick was maybe the stupidest thing that they did. But lo and behold, they didn't let that hold them back from taking Sanders, which I think is a really good value pick. Who cares if that guy doesn't work out? And if he's too much trouble, you cut him. If he's not good enough, you cut him. He's a fifth-round pick. Who cares? It's not a big investment. But the Dillon Gabriel, what if Shedeur Sanders is good? And I never saw anything out of Dillon Gabriel in the seven stops he had in college and all the times I saw him that made me think this guy could be a starter in the National Football League. I didn't like most of what they did. But the Shedeur Sanders roll of the dice, by that point in the draft, why not?
Who's the starting quarterback week one of the Cleveland Browns?
Joe Flacco. And I think the reason is you have some guys in that locker room that don't want to have the patience. I mean, I don't know what in the world, besides obviously the price tag. They sold Myles Garrett to have that thing shift on a dime the way it did. It obviously was largely the money. But you certainly weren't selling him on Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders and all of this. So I think it's Flacco because you know what you have in Flacco, and I think there's no shot that Gabriel or Sanders are ready by week one to lead this team. And the Kenny Pickett thing I never understood to begin with, so add that to the list of things. You have a five-person room, and there's when you got five, you got none. I guess that's probably the way Cleveland's looking at it at this point. But Flacco had some moments, but, you know, like with any of these guys who at his point of his career should be more of a backup, you know there's a shelf life for it, and you saw the flash at the end a couple years ago, and you kind of saw the fizzle in the playoffs when they lost, and I think that's kind of you're on borrowed time with Joe Flacco, but I think you can rely on him enough with where this organization is coming out the gate week one.
You know, already thought that they'd be a good candidate for Hard Knocks, and then they signed Diontae Johnson yesterday. Really elevates it even more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think Hard Knocks is a good enough reality producer for probably what would be great. I don't even need the whole team. Just give me the quarterback room. Just give me a Hard Knocks on those five guys between who knows what Deshaun Watson's doing besides old man Joe Flacco. Kenny Pickett is like, where do I fall in this? You got the two rookie quarterbacks. I don't even need to see Myles Garrett. I don't need to see Diontae Johnson. I don't need to see Jerry Jeudy. I don't need to see any of them. I just give me those five quarterbacks for 5 to 6 weeks, and I think you couldn't script something better than what the dynamic in that room is going to be.
You know, John, I just realized I forgot. I know you haven't seen every snap of his. You're covering the Buffalo Bills football, but Elijah Moore has been in Cleveland the last 2 years, and obviously the Bills had him in on a visit yesterday. You know, what did you see from him at the times that you were able to peek in on the Browns?
I mean, I loved him coming out of Ole Miss. He was a guy that 4 years ago with a wide receiver train and all that. I mean, I loved him. I thought at the back end of the first, he would have been perfect for what the Bills were looking for at that point in time. And it hasn't formulated in the National Football League. And some people will point to he's played for the Jets and the Browns and hasn't had a quarterback. We've seen very good receivers, very talented receivers have success, even with marginal quarterbacks. And he's popped when he's had Flacco and when he's had Jameis Winston throwing him the football. He still is an incredibly fast receiver. So that's clearly, if we're building the basketball team of a wide receiver group, that's the element that this Bills core is still missing. That's what he brings. It's a low-risk type of idea to kick the tires on. And he flashed enough the past few years, 60 catches, 600 yards, about what he did the past 2 years in Cleveland. I mean, with this group, with the Bills, that would be perfect. So I don't to me, if the Bills ultimately go down that route and they sign him, it's, I would almost envision it Elijah Moore versus Curtis Samuel, but I know that Bunny would probably be different, but that would be the way I would look at it. So he wouldn't move the needle in my feeling of the overall projection of the wide receiver group on the Bills, but I like the idea of trying it.
The next order of business for fans and us in the media is the Bills' schedule, and we've talked a lot about it. We don't know if they're going to go to Ireland or even London to play the Browns. Who knows? I mean, I don't think it's as likely, but I don't even think necessarily Ireland is. But what would you think about that? Like, would that be good with you? Would you want that both from a professional and personal standpoint?
So I've never gone to an international game. The
okay.
two times that the Bills have gone international and played in London, I did not go with my previous employer. So from that standpoint, heck yeah. And I would prefer Ireland. I did London, like, honestly, when I was like 16 in high school, and it would obviously be a different experience. It will be working so much, so you don't even really get to experience it the way that you would like, but I would prefer Ireland because I've never been there. I think that would be super, super cool, and it would be the first time that the league's done that. So I would be down with that, and I think it would be a trip more so than London that would really get Bills fans jazzed up, and the group in cavalry would be so large that I think it would be a cool experience. Especially, you know, there's a lot of Irish people that live around here. So I think it would just be super cool.
All right, John. Well, when that schedule comes out, I'm no doubt I think the Bills will be on your network a few times because, you know, they have Sunday Night Football, whole other bunch of games around the schedule. So obviously you'll be pretty invested in that. Tell everybody what you guys have going on, where they can find you. And obviously our own Paul Hamilton joins you sometimes.
He does. Yeah. Sports Talk Live on Monday nights on Channel 2 at 7 o'clock. It's me, Adam Bonini, Vic Carucci. We take care of the Bills and all that. Then P. Ham comes on in and talks Sabres. Yesterday, we actually dove in briefly on the Amherst because they're exciting right now. Devin Levi is continuing to maybe put that carrot out in front of you to buy in once again and say, okay, the goalie situation with the Sabres isn't all that bad. They can just have Levi save UPL. But, you know, we discuss those types of things. And even in the off season, there's always something to talk about with both teams, and we dabble into other things as well when the opportunity presents it. So that's on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. We've got only about a month. We do take a summer break, so we got about 4 shows left, and then you'll just catch me 6 and 11 o'clock on Channel 2 at the news every night.
Love it, buddy. Thank you so much for doing this today. Obviously, say hi to Heather and Logan. Enjoy, bud.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
All right, you got it. That is John Scott. You can find him, by the way, on Twitter. Just want to make sure I got it right, because it's John Scott TV, right? Yeah, that's right. But no H, just J-O-N Scott TV. WGRZ TV2 Sports Director. You can find our Paul Hamilton on with him, as he said, on Sports Talk Live. And I'm guessing at some point here we will be having some Sabres news in some capacity. I guess it's possible there is none. And when I say that, I'm not like saying, oh my God, they're moving on from Kevin Adams. They could. I mean, just the natural progression of the offseason, the natural cycle of things, there's usually some news. And then you get into RFA stuff, and then you get into the draft. July 1st, obviously, big key date in the NHL. So all of that's happening. In the meantime, you have the NFL schedule release coming up on May 14th. That's a Wednesday. Going to do the NFL schedule release. Looking forward to seeing that. We're going to be talking a lot about that on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo and here on WGR. Speaking of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, Matt Bove and I, we do the Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast. It's an original Odyssey podcast. You can find it on my Twitter, on my YouTube page, excuse me, for video at Sal Sports. You can also just download, listen, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, the Odyssey app, all of that. And we did a whole bunch of stuff on Thursday night after the draft, on Friday night after the draft, and then again on Sunday night after the draft, you know, 24 hours after it was done. And I just want to thank everybody and tell everybody that the numbers are outstanding, and I really appreciate it. We are hitting some record numbers of viewers, subscribers, downloads, and the feedback's been amazing. And about a half hour or so on each of the nights of the draft, we were down at One Bills Drive doing it. If you haven't listened to it, if you haven't watched it, just go check it out. I think you'll get a lot more insight. Matt and I just kind of devoting a full, you know, half hour or so, a little bit more on Sunday to the Bills draft, what they did. On Sunday on the podcast, what we did was we actually had Tommy Parzamiso on with us for a little while. Tommy was the young man who announced the pick through the Make-A-Wish Foundation, his wish being granted in Green Bay for the Bills. He joined us on the podcast, talked about the experience. It was super cool talking with Tommy. So check all of that out at the Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast with Matt Bove and me. But thank you very much for all those of you who have been coming along lately, because we have a lot of really great numbers we've been having, and it really means a lot to all of us. All right, we're going to take a timeout here. We're going to continue on this discussion about the Bills and the NFL draft. I have thrown a question out to you. Who is your favorite pick? Who is your least favorite pick? 160 responses so far. Actually, more than that through the quote tweets, I guess. And a lot of interesting ones for a lot of different reasons. We'll talk about that and a lot more when we come back here on a Tuesday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.